You can have a seat. Kids can head on out. There aren't any? No kids in here to head out? All right. Kids teachers can have the night off then, I guess. Is that how that works? All right, very good. Well, welcome, kids teachers who don't have any kids to teach. And I'm excited you guys are here. Thanks for being here tonight. I do miss you guys a lot when I'm gone for a week, but I do want to thank everyone that chipped in to make sure nothing skips a beat when I take off. I appreciate Murph speaking last week, and just the way this church works. I had a chance to kind of talk about our church to a couple people we visited some old friends we hadn't seen in a long time for dinner one night while we were at the beach, and of course they start asking questions about what it is I do, and I have to try and explain a church whose name they can't spell, and it's always a weird thing. But every time I go through that process with someone where I start from scratch trying to explain this community of people, the more proud I am of it, the more honored I am to be a part of it, the more excited I am to get back to it. So thank you guys, I love that you know, people that I get to be with that are about the important things. And then everyone just steps up. I mean, you know, David stepped up tonight so that Toby had a week off. He's I don't know if you probably haven't heard, but he had some big things going on the last few weeks. Toby deserved a week off before he was going to really hit the ground running in some new ways. And we will continue to keep him and all of our leaders in our prayers as they do that. Tonight is one of those nights where I'm gonna have to whittle down what it is we could talk about, because the lectionary text in the last third of a 3-year cycle of what's called the lectionary, which is there's year A, B, and C. We actually started in year B, so we're now kind of in year A, and it's this kind of church calendar that churches all over the world take part in and study the same scriptures each week, and so you kind of walk your way through the biblical story across 3 years. And so and some of the texts, lectionary texts, you get excited about when you see them. Some you're like, ooh, I don't know what to do with this when it comes up, but it's kind of nice on my part where I don't have to, you know, just go open up the whole Bible and try to figure out what to speak about, because there's kind of something already laid out for me. And then there's weeks like this week where there's so much. I mean, there's so much here. The text this week is technically from Matthew 9:35 to Matthew 10:23, and there is so much going on here. And so as I say probably about, I feel like about 75% of the time lately, I'm not even going to remotely do justice to all this text. There's so much going on here, right? So what I want to do is I want to read through it. I want to make sure we say it all out loud and hear it and hear the scriptures. But then I want to kind of really take a 10,000 foot view of this and kind of talk about the idea of mission and being on mission in the broadest sense. And hopefully we can all leave with a little something as we do that. But let's go ahead and kind of bear down here for a minute. And we're going to read from Matthew 9:35 through chapter 10, verse 23. It says this, verse 35 of chapter 9 of Matthew. Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them, because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." Jesus called his 12 disciples to him and gave them authority to drive out impure spirits and to heal every disease and sickness. These are the names of the 12 apostles. First, Simon, who is called Peter, and his brother Andrew. James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. Philip and Bartholomew. Thomas and Matthew the tax collector. James, son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus. Simon the Zealot and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. These 12 Jesus sent out with the following instructions. Do not go among the Gentiles or enter any towns of the Samaritans. Go rather to the lost sheep of Israel. I'll stop there for a minute. Now, what we know now, knowing the rest of the story, is that this is kind of just a first step, right? I mean, because once you get to Acts, and once Jesus has ascended and they send out, what we realize really quickly is that this call and this door is opening up for everybody, not just the house of Israel. But for this first portion and the area they're in, this is who Jesus is sending them out to. Verse 7, as you go, proclaim the message. The kingdom of heaven has come near. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those who have leprosy, drive out demons. Freely you have received, freely give. Do not get any gold or silver or copper to take with you in your belts. No bag for the journey or extra shirt or sandals or a staff for the worker is worth his keep. Whatever town or village you enter, search there for some worthy person and stay at their house until you leave. As you enter the home, give it your greeting. If the home is deserving, let your peace rest on it. If it is not, let your peace return to you. If anyone will not welcome you or listen to your words, leave that home or town and shake the dust off your feet. Truly, I tell you, it will be more bearable for Sodom and Gomorrah on the day of judgment than for that town. I am sending you out like sheep among wolves. Therefore, be as shrewd as snakes and as innocent as doves. Be on your guard. You'll be handed over to the local councils and be flogged in the synagogues. On my account, you'll be brought before the governors and the kings as witnesses to them and to the Gentiles. But when they arrest you, do not worry about what you will say or how you will say it. At that time, you'll be given what to say. For it will not be you speaking, but the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. Brother will betray brother to death, his father his child. Children rebel against their parents and have them put to death. You will be hated by everyone because of me, but the one who stands firm to the end will be saved. When you are persecuted in one place, flee to another. Truly I tell you, you will not finish going through the towns of Israel before the Son of Man comes. So I just want to spend about 5 minutes on each of those verses, and I feel like we'll be out of here sometime tomorrow morning and really get a good feel for everything. So, I mean, there's so much going on here, right? There's this kind of move of compassion on Christ's part where he's looking at these people and having compassion of them, this sense of call and a sense of, you know, the harvest being ready and the workers being few. There's the naming of the apostles. There's this specific mission laid out for these apostles to their fellow Jews. There's the kind of instructions on what to do when you go out there, the warnings about what's going to happen as you go out there, and the comfort of knowing that it's okay that bad stuff's going to happen because God is with you, and when all is said and done, all will be made right. Good will come of it. So there's all of this going on, and we could, any one of those things, and if we weren't going through the lectionary right now, if you've been a long time Ecclesia person, some of you may not know this, but we spent the first 7 years going through the book of Luke. Right, so we can spend some time. We did an entire week on one word one time, God's honest truth. Father or our? I can't remember in the Lord's Prayer. Maybe it was 2 weeks on two words. Anyways, we can get in the weeds when it's time to get in the weeds. But again, today I want to step back and really kind of see the forest from the trees, and I want to talk to us about and think through this idea of mission, of being a missionary or a person on mission. And I want to submit to you that although that word has taken on a lot of different meanings, and although most of us have found ways to separate ourselves from that term, I want us to consider the idea that if we consider ourselves a follower of Christ, a disciple of Christ, if you are a disciple, then you are a missionary. You are a person on mission, right? There's a foundational idea for us as a community. As I said in the beginning, our name, Ecclesia, the called out ones, it's this idea that we wanted to put at the very center of who we are, that this is not just religion for religion's sake, this is not a church building, but this is something we are called to. It's an activity. It's a mission. And this is a foundational idea that we always need to hold on to, but I know I personally, and so I'm going to do a lot of what I do each week, which is just go ahead and project onto you my own struggles. And then you can go ahead and you know, if it sticks, then great. If not, just pat me on the back afterwards and help me feel better. We're not here to say yes to some ideas. We're not here to just affirm some creeds or some theological convictions. We are people of the way. We are people on a way. We are people of mission. We are not here, it's not about what we believe, which is not to say what we believe is not important, because that's connected to who we are and what we do, but it's not strictly speaking about what we believe. How we live, where we go, what we do is what we believe, right? It's less about platitudes and more about practice. We are a people of mission. If we are people who are following the word that was made flesh. But it's difficult to buy that, isn't it? It's difficult to hold on to that. I mean, I don't know if you do, but this is something I constantly have to remind myself, that I am called to a mission, that I have this purpose in this world. Life as usual takes over most of the time. And I'm not sure why it's difficult. Exactly. I don't know if it's just because I'm lazy and ungodly, although certainly that's part of it. But I also know, I think it's partly because of a misunderstanding of what mission really is about. I know in the church that I grew up in, and I'm not sure if you'll connect to this at all, but my religious past has made it a little more difficult for me to buy into it. Maybe it's just me, but and maybe think about this. How is the idea of mission or being on mission framed for you as a kid? If you grew up in church, if you grew up in a religious tradition, some of you didn't, and that's fine. So you're like, I never heard that word before I got here, Mike. That's great. In fact, you may be better off. But how was it framed up for you as a kid? Because for me, it was this, it was this directive. It was this thing that was held over our heads. It was this weird mixture of competitive, like I'm out there competing against other ideas and I'm trying to win. And there's a lot of talk of winning. And I'm not a competitive person by nature, so I was always like, that always kind of worked against me. But it was this weird mix of like competitive and obligatory and performance-based and ridden with guilt. You know, mission. Sounds awesome, doesn't it? Who doesn't want to be a part of that? And there's a whole lot I could unpack with that, but that's kind of the brew that was mixed up for me in regards to what it meant to be on mission and what our call was kind of in this world. And it was mostly about convincing other people of what to think, saying yes to this and no to this, kind of say yes to our theology and no to their theology, which was the wrong theology because it wasn't ours. And so that was really more what it was about. And our theory of mission, basically, if you really boiled it down, went like this. I'm a horrible person, completely 100% awful, and yet somehow I'm blessed to be scared by God's righteous and eternal anger. God has spared me from his own anger. And so since I have been lucky as the worm that I am to be spared from God's anger and wrath, I should then go out, kind of obliged to go out and convince other people how horrible they are and how lucky they are that God is not, damning them as well. And so I'm blessed to be spared from God's righteous and eternal anger, so how dare I not get others to realize that same thing? Now, get out there, you worm. And that was kind of, and it never really took for me. I never really could find my place in that mission. And that may not have been, you may have come from a much healthier perspective than that. I hope you did. But one of the things I really wanted to focus on tonight is one portion of this, and I want to understand that kind of backdrop, that kind of motivation, that soil that mission was rooted in for me as a kid, that is not reflected in the scriptures. That is not where Jesus comes from. That's not what motivates the mission. Let's look back again in verses 36 through 38. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them. They were harassed. They were helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. He had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. He then said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." He had compassion on them. For Christ, this is not about winning. It was not about obligation. It was not about performance or pouring guilt over anyone. It was nothing of that type. It was not competitive. It was compassionate. His heart was broken for what he saw in front of him. He was moved to do something by compassion. And so if you don't hear anything else tonight, because I think this is the first step to maybe beginning to see yourself as part of the mission, which you are, understand the mission is not when the obligated listen up to the one that they are obligated to and then are guilted into some kind of activity. That is not what mission is. Mission is when the genuinely compassionate open their eyes, see the need, and are moved to do something. Mission is when the genuinely compassionate open their eyes, see the need, and are moved to do something. So tonight, talking about mission is not so much a task I feel like I need to convince you of or something I need to guilt you into or obligate you to. Because I think mission is the natural result of compassionate people opening their eyes, seeing the need, and being moved to do something. For me, we'll get confessional now. So for me, if I'm honest, if I really boil down my large periods of time where I fail to join in on this mission, to feel a part of this mission, to understand that that's what I'm called to, when I fight against that idea of mission, when it feels distant to me, it's not a lack of conviction or a lack of obligation. It's a deficit in either my compassion or my recognition of need that's out there. It's often an intentional closing of my eyes because I just don't want to act like something's there because I don't want to have to do anything about it. Or it's just me being caught up in myself long enough to not really have the kind of compassion that I want to have, I should have. So I'm embarrassed to tell you what I'm going to say next, but this is part of how we do things here. Is basically I just demonstrate how unqualified I am to be pastor, and then you guys forgive me. So I was thinking about this idea of like, okay, I don't want to get up and talk about mission like it's something I've got figured out and everyone needs to join me on. Why do I struggle? Why do I fall out of this call so often? And again, I realize it's generally a lack of compassion or a lack of kind of opening my eyes to the need that is out there. And I immediately thought, basically, okay, so if I look back in something, Facebook is just cruel for a myriad of reasons, but the time hop things that they do are cruel on multiple levels. You're almost always thinner. When you have a three-year-old like we do, like you're reminded of how fast things are going. Maybe there's someone that you've lost all of a sudden that pops up on there. You know, there's a lot of things about it that you go, oh, that's nice. And a lot of times, oh, it's just kind of a gut shot. And a video popped up not too long ago. It was one of those gut shot kind of moments because it reminded me of basically myself 4 years ago. And about 4 years ago, if you were to kind of talk to me about my identity and my sense of calling, if you were to talk about mission with me, I would have talked about the homeless in Hattiesburg. That would have come up pretty quickly for me. We were doing Hope House for several years. We were kind of deep into it. It was a big part of my life. I was spending a lot of time there. I was out at the camps with the guys. I was, you know, working with people and trying to show compassion. It was a big part of my identity. It was part of who I was. There was a point about 4 years ago where there pretty much wasn't a homeless person, at least on this side of 59, that I did not know well. It was a big part of my idea of kind of who I was and what I was called to be. Everywhere I looked, there was someone on the streets that was in need. Everywhere I looked, I saw a new person I hadn't met yet or someone who needed something that maybe I could possibly provide or help point them in the right direction. There was someone without fresh clothes or a hot meal or a roof over the head, and we were trying to do what we could to meet those needs. A huge part of my identity was wrapped up in the sense of mission I had among the homeless community. That was just kind of my spot. One of my spots. And then I got a second job that actually required work and attention. I hadn't had one of those in a while. Most of my second jobs outside of this were pretty easy and paid accordingly, which could be a struggle at times. But I had a second job that required a lot of time and attention and was worthy of the time and attention. I mean, as you guys know, I work extra table during the week. I believe in the time and energy I invest in that. It's technically, I'm feeding more people right now than I was when I was at Hope House. It's removed, but it was important, and I loved it, and I wanted to do it well. So that required a lot of time. We had our first child, that requires a small amount of time and attention. So she was there, and of course, you just die to give all that you can to your child when they're there. And so life changed a lot. And then, of course, as we all know, our brother Tony was killed on the front steps of Hope House, which ostensibly killed Hope House too, because we didn't know how to run it without him in the house. We didn't know how to do that without them there. And obviously, and all of you know who were here during that time, there was a lot of grieving. There was it was life-changing for all of us to have a good friend taken like that and to have the ministry kind of snuffed out the way that was. And it was the domino effect that led to basically me walking away from the mission to the homeless, so to speak. It's not really a part of my life right now. And I'll be honest with you, I can make a really good case for why it's not a part of my life right now. I don't have the time I used to have. I don't have the energy I had. I don't know how I would include it in my life the way I did before and still be a good dad and still work the job and other calling I have. So I'm not up here to, you know, I'm not trying to overstate it. I've got great reasons why I'm not walking out to camps every week anymore. But at the end of the day, even if I've got every good reason, and even if God doesn't want me doing that work right now, with that came something else that I don't think God wanted for me. At the end of the day, if I'm honest, even though it may be necessary in this season of my life that that's not really part of my ministry, at the end of the day, I've shut off my compassion and I've closed my eyes. And I don't know if it's self-protection. I don't know if if I was still as open to that community of people as I was before, but wasn't able to put in the time, that it would be too heart-wrenching, or I'm trying to protect myself, or I'm just selfish, or you just kind of get out of the habit. I don't know what it is. I don't see many homeless people around right now. And you know what? There's just as many, probably more homeless people right now than there was 4 years ago. But I don't see them. I certainly don't make the effort to see them. I certainly don't. I very rarely see any of the guys that we used to work with. Most of them are gone now. But if I do see someone, I don't feel the compulsion to stop the car and have a chat. I don't feel a compulsion to drive through, make sure they have a hot meal or see if they need something out of Walmart. I don't have that kind of open eyes and open heart towards that community of people. And that's not a good thing. But I want to lay it out there for you guys. I want to be honest about how quickly you lose mission, right? And it's, my theology hasn't changed, my beliefs haven't changed, my sense of obligation towards God's grace, and none of those things have changed. But that valve of compassion and the kind of openness of eyes and heart towards that community is not there right now for me. I say it like it happened to me and I didn't do it. And I think that's an important thing to hold on to and to own up to, is that for me, I've gotten better at pretending that the problem maybe isn't there. I've gotten better at not seeing it even though it is there. And it's just a stunting of compassion and a closing of my eyes. I mean, if I call it anything else, I'm just dressing it up to make myself feel better, right? Just because I can't necessarily do all the things I used to do doesn't mean I should shut those things off as well. But I have. And what I've realized is that when I fall out of this idea of being on mission, of having this kind of very specific purpose in this world that Christ has called us to, it's because I've done that. I've turned off the compassion. I've closed my eyes because it's easier just to pretend like it's not going on, right? And again, it's not obligation, it's not guilt, none of those things that we're so attached to. I don't think that has anything to do with it, because I don't think that's what started Christ on this path. I don't think it was motivated Christ. It's certainly not, I think, what should motivate us. In fact, I think if you think about who do you know that lives most on mission, and I don't even mean like a missionary in Africa digging clean water wells or something. That's great. They may be doing that. But I mean, they could be the postman. I don't care who they are. But the person who has this sense of like calling in this world, like, you know, some of those people, right, who just kind of seem to live in that place. And what do they have that you don't have, or that you turn off sometimes? And for me, almost universally, it's that they never turn off that compassion. They don't close their eyes to it. Even if they can't do anything about it, even if it's devastating because it's out of their control, they remain open. Their hearts and their eyes remain open to what's going on in this world. Right? It's one of the reasons, against my better judgment, I've remained friends with Mark Langham. And I don't know a lot of you know Mark. He'll be at church here when he's in town. He's been all over the world doing all kinds of different work. And I don't know if you follow him on Facebook and stuff. But he simultaneously makes me feel worse about myself than anyone I know, without ever saying a mean thing to me. And it's because he in a very real way, and he would be embarrassed. I doubt he listens to the talk, so he probably won't hear this. But he's doing a lot more important things than listening to me talk But he's one of those guys that just has this permanent sense of mission. And he had this post this last week. He took a close-up picture. He's in Iraq right now. He's in Iraq. And it's a close-up picture. Actually, I posted the picture up here, not that you can read it, of a guy's arm who's in the hospital who caught a sniper's bullet across the side of his head and was unresponsive. And the tattoo says something along the lines of, I do not fear death, but I fear the tears of my mother that fall, or something like that. And then he had this, you know what, I'm not going to do it justice. I printed it out. I'll read this. This may be off topic, but it's good. So, his tattoo read, I am not afraid of death. I'm afraid of the tears of my mother falling down. We prayed over him all day and night. We sang over him, nurses and doctors, translators and maintenance. We prayed for mercy that God would take him quickly. We prayed for a miracle too. After almost a full day, he opened his eyes. He responded to voices, to light. Almost 30 hours after entering our compound, he was transferred to herbal, to a neurosurgeon. We don't know what things may come. Every day we only see that evil plays by no rules, accepts no constraints. Evil merely hungers for what it hungers for and steals from others. Evil decapitates children in front of their mothers. Evil guns down whole families fleeing. Evil never sleeps. It always dreams up new ways of wreaking havoc and fear. And good must be good, must obey, must be ethical and kind. Evil laughs and scoffs and devours with an appetite insatiable, and good has to keep on being good. And if this is all there was in the universe, just good versus evil, then all would be lost. But there is a holy God, there is a power of the resurrection, and there is his promise to make all things new. This is why we sit beside the broken body of a dying stranger. This is why we pray. This is why we whisper the name of Jesus over and over again. This is why we hold on to hope when hope seems long lost. This is why we are not afraid of death. I don't think for a second, and he really would be embarrassed if he knew I was probably using this as an example, but I don't think for a second that Mark could be where he's at and do what he's doing right now, open his eyes to what is horrific. I don't know how he is where he's at right now and taking all that in. I don't think he could do that if it was just some sense of obligation, if what he had was some sense of duty. I think he would have fallen on his sword a long time ago, right? But with a heart that is open, with compassion and the willingness to open your eyes to what's going on, there's this sense of calling that immediately comes from. There's a sense of mission there. How else, apart from this compassion, could you call people to this mission? Because, as I've said many times, Jesus is a horrible salesperson. Think about how he tries to sell this mission to people. If all there is duty or obligation, no one is signing up for this, right? It's not exactly a convincing sales job for Jesus. Go spend your life among the most needy, broken, and desperate, the lost sheep. Don't take anything extra with you. Don't make any real money or gain anything for your work. Be continually dependent on others for a place to stay. In exchange for this, you'll be disliked, attacked, hated, dragged in front of the government and authorities. And you'll also be disliked by not just those you're meeting, but even possibly your own family. Wow, doesn't that sound awesome? Everyone get in a single file line. Let's go on a mission. There has to be more than a sense of debt. There has to be more than a sense of duty or obligation to say yes to this. There has to be a point that we come to where we have such compassion for what's going on in front of us that we can't help but do something about it. And that's where the call is for me. I'm not trying to guilt you or anything. I don't want to obligate you in or myself to anything. I want to be the kind of person that has the kind of compassion that forces mission. I can't help but choose mission. Mission is not for the most convicted. It's not for the most obligated. And it's definitely not for the most qualified. I mean, you look at that list of disciples. Good Lord. There's hotheads, traitors, lawbreakers, violent, people prone to bouts of violence. They're angry, they're lying, cheating, thieves. I mean, this is not a highly qualified group of folks that he's sending out. I wouldn't want them on my team. But we are all equipped and we are all called. If you have the capacity for compassion, and the ability to perceive the need that's in front of you, you have everything you need to be called on mission in this world. You are called to mission in this world. Now, we can't do everything. We aren't God. But that's not an excuse to turn off those valves, right? I don't have a good closing. I should. Like a great story, something that really drives home the point, maybe even draws a few tears out. I couldn't come up with anything. So I want to end with this kind of question and this idea, and just you do with it what you need to do with it. And the question is, are you a person that feels like you are on mission? Do you see your life as a call? And if you don't, allow me to maybe be the first to say, you're wrong. And that's good news. You have a calling, you have a purpose, you are equipped, and you are sent out to something more important than the stuff that just goes away in this world. And if you feel unqualified, you have everything you need right now. The question is, will we have the compassion and we have the open eyes and hearts to go and be what this world needs? Because it needs everywhere. It's just a matter of seeing it and doing what we can do. And trusting God with the rest, yes. Don't curl up in the fetal position because you can't do it all. You can't. But you can love the person in front of you. You can live with a sense of purpose and mission. You are equipped and you are called. Let's pray.